When I read a chapter like this, I always wish that I had the ability to read a passage with the feeling that's in it. You know, very few people are good readers. People can call words, but they can't read. I think that's true of most people today. Now, you ask a person to read a passage, you call the words. You haven't read a passage until you're able to get the spirit of the speaker or the writer and convey that. And very few people can do that. I've heard a few, but not many. But I want to read this. Most about all I do, this is God's appeal to the people here and warning, threatening them of what's going to come. Now remember that Judah at this time was in a very bad shape. Josiah was cutting down the idols and the altars of the false gods, but that didn't change the hearts of the people. Jeremiah was working on the hearts of the people, and they weren't changing. So he was faced with that, the disappointment of it, and of course God was too. God was the one who really disappointed. Let's read, I think I was down to verse 5. Because the other was a conclusion to the former chapter, and now this one is a threatened invasion from the Babylonians. Now remember that Jeremiah prophesied somewhere between about 626 and 586, or maybe a few years after that, down in Egypt. But in a rate, about 40 years there. But Babylon was rising to power. In 625, Nabopolassar became the king of Babylon. In 612, he started moving forward to overthrow and destroy Assyria, then come on west to Haran, and come down into Judah. He came down in 605. But now Jeremiah is warning them that he is coming. God's warning them beforehand. That means then that if they listen to God and turn back to him, he then would have averted the coming of Nebuchadnezzar. God's able to do that. I don't know how he does it, but I tried to figure that out, but I knew he couldn't. But at any rate, God's able to use these kings even though they don't realize he's using them. All right, now let's try to get the spirit of this if we can. Declare ye in Judah and publish in Jerusalem and say, blow ye the trumpet in the land. Cry aloud and say, assemble yourselves and let us go into the fortified cities. Set up a standard toward Zion. Flee for safety. Stay not, for I will bring evil from the north and a great destruction. Right now, the evil from the north is Babylon. Now, he's calling from the people to make preparation for that. They'll repent and will have to do it. If they don't, why make preparation for the coming of this Babylonian king? So the trumpet was a warning. Now, in the 10th chapter of Numbers, we learn that the trumpet would call to an assembly of worship, certain tones would, or another trumpet sound would call to war, another trumpet sound would be a warning of what was coming, and then another one of the coming of the war. So these different trumpets sound, that's what Paul meant when he said, if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, then a man won't know what to do, doesn't know where to charge or where to retreat, doesn't know what to do. So the trumpet was a warning. Now in Revelation, as I pointed out and I studied out a few years ago, whenever it was, that when you come to the trumpet, the seven trumpets were warnings. So God was warning the people of what would come, and the seven bowls of wrath were bowls of destruction. That is, final judgments of the people involved. And I don't mean the final judgment, but a final judgment upon them at that time. So your trumpets were warnings. So you should sound the trumpets here, warn the people. God's giving them an opportunity here. He moves on here. Verse 7, a lion is going up from his thicket, and a destroyer of nations. He, that is the lion, so he's talking about Nebuchadnezzar, talking about Babylonians. He's the one he's talking about. He's the lion. He's on his way, coming up from his thicket. He's on his way. He has gone forth from his place to make thy land desolate, that thy cities be laid waste without inhabitant. Now, I don't know when Jeremiah issued this prophecy. This might have been as Babylon left by 612 on his way to Nineveh. And he's on his way then on down into this, the land of the Jews there. So I don't know. Jeremiah is not altogether chronological. He is some things are, some are not. And now he moves on here. For he's coming now and to lay thy land desolate, that thy city be laid waste without inhabitant. Now I know it's going to be a complete destruction. Try to get the picture. For this, gird you with sackcloth, lament and wail, for the fierce anger of Jehovah is not turned back from us. So Jeremiah is warning them now that Babylonians are coming. This expression of the fierce wrath of God poured out upon you because of your wickedness. I want to talk this morning, my next lesson, on when the world forgets God, when it rejects God, when it leaves God out of its thinking. All of these warnings of the Old Testament are to instruct us and that we may profit by them. I think the trumpets are sounding in this country now. I think the trumpets are sounding. I think the bowls of wrath will be poured out one of these days, maybe not too far off. Nobody knows but God. At any rate, we ought to listen to the trumpets, but we're not. We know things are wrong. We know they're in a bad shape here. But I think the trumpets are sounding, but nobody cares. Right? And not turn back from us. And it shall come to pass at that day, that's the day of this coming lion from his thicket, that day saith Jehovah, that the heart of the king shall perish, and the heart of the princes, and the priests shall be astonished, and the prophets shall wonder. Right? Now these were your leaders. Here's your king, here's his princes, that's his council, not necessarily his sons, but those of high rank in the government. Then here are your priests, and they have failed in their duty. Here the prophets, they prophesied falsely. They've been prophesying, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. There was no peace. Also, we have similar things. We prophesy of good times and everything will be fine. Doesn't look like they're promising to me. But so he's picturing here a dark day for Judah on his way to them. Then said I, Ah, Lord Jehovah, surely thou hast greatly deceived this people. And Jerusalem saying, You shall have peace, whereas the sword reacheth unto the light. Now, is he saying that God deliberately lied to the people? No. And what this means is like it is in 2 Thessalonians 2. Because they receive not a love for the truth, God sendeth them a working of error, that they may believe a lie and be damned. Now, individuals who have an opportunity to hear the truth, reject the truth, then what is there opposite truth or instead of truth? You either have truth or you have falsehood, one or the other. It's either true or it's false. Right? Now, God has sent his prophets to warn them that was true. But they believe the false prophets until God allowed them to believe a lie and be condemned, be destroyed. What else could he do? I want you to stop and think about that. God made us such that he cannot invade the will of an individual and make people do anything. God made us that way. Now we suffer the consequence of it. But God can't make us do anything. Now he limited himself when he made us. That doesn't mean God's power is limited. It means that God limited his own power when he made man. Right? Now then, if an individual will not believe truth, what alternative does he have? Falsehood, doesn't he? Right? So then, God allows a man to believe the lie that he may be condemned because he loved not the truth. Now that's what's happening today. Because men have no love for truth, therefore God's allowing them to believe a lie that they may be condemned and the nation ultimately suffer the consequence, which is destruction. That's where God's always worked. Now, I think our people have missed a whole lot of truth by not studying the Old Testament prophets. They may read the condition of the times in the light of the Old Testament prophets. Because they were dealing with situations such as we're facing today, you see. All right, so he's warning them now. They can still turn back to God. All right, now let's notice here. But he said, the sword is reaching unto life. Here the sword's on its way, but here they're still preaching peace, and you're letting them believe it. Well, what alternative does God have? They reject truth. The only alternative is falsehood. And they're preaching peace when there is no peace, and people are believing that instead of truth. So move on. At that time shall it be said of to this people and to Jerusalem, a hot wind from the bare heights in the wilderness toward the daughter of my people, not to winnow, not to cleanse. A full wind from these shall come for me. Now will I also utter judgments against them, against the people. Right now here, that east wind was what we call the Sirocco. A fierce east wind dried and destroyed everything before it. Right now here, this nation, this power, Babylon, is coming from the north, and it's really northeast. It comes, from the east over north and then come down. All right? But now here is a strong wind from the bare heights. Now last Sunday, or the Sunday before, we had them worshiping idols on the bare heights. And there they were celebrating and committing adultery and all that. Now then, what's coming from the bare heights, from their source of idolatry? They're coming, the Babylonians, as a fierce, destroying wind that's going to destroy the people. So from the bare heights, they were worshiping the idols, and all that was going on there. Now from the bare heights, from the result of that, coming a strong wind. Right now, can I make an application about our own nation? Here we've been worshiping the god of money, the god of pleasure, the god of lust, all that. That's been our god here the last 25 or 50 years. Right now, as a result of that, what will come? Wind, a strong sirocco, destroying wind from the heights, from the things that we've sown. In the next lesson, through in Jeremiah, they've sown the wind. No, that's in Hosea. They've sown the wind. They'll reap the whirlwind. What is the whirlwind? Not a little dust devil like we have out here in Arizona. Tornado. A terrible cyclone. Terrible tornado. They've sown to the wind. They'll reap the wind. We can't sow seeds of sin on Saturday night and pray for a crop failure on Sunday morning. That's where a man sow it. That shall he also reap. We're going to reap what we've been sowing for the last 40 or 50 years in this country. All right, so that ought to be a warning to us. That's where God always works. Well, let's look a little further now. Notice further here, and I will utter my judgments against them. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and the clouds of a tornado. With his chariots shall he be as a whirlwind, as the cyclone that follows it. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are ruined. This is Jeremiah's conclusion. Woe unto us, for we are ruined. Why? For the Babylonians are coming as a tornado and to destroy from the bare heights. Well, that ought to warn the people, shouldn't it? They didn't. No, they went right on, didn't listen to him. Put him in jail. Put him down in a dungeon. Or rather, system of what he preached. O Jerusalem, wash thy heart from wickedness, that thou mayest be saved. Still hope, you see, still possibility. Even though the Babylonian was on his way, he left. Babylon headed from Nineveh, and then over to Haran, and then down into Judah, all that. God can turn him back. You remember in Isaiah, when old Sennacherib was sending all those letters to Hezekiah and to the people there, God said, no, you're not to shoot an arrow in this city. What happened? 185,000 of his men died in one night on their way to Jerusalem. God turned them back. God has his way of turning a thing back if we listen to him and turn to him. I'm just preaching this morning, about 10 or 12 of us here, about all. I wish I could preach these messages over the television, radio, somewhere, to to people, but he wouldn't listen to them, I know that. But they ought to be preached anyway. But we're not preaching them. Right? Now he says, How long shall thine evil thoughts lodge within thee? How long are you going to think evil? How long are you going to keep on? I know how long. They're going to keep on until the hours of destruction are being turned loose in that city. How long are we going to go on? And after a while, when something happens, we're going to hit the bottom. We're going to realize the judgment of God is upon us. For a voice declared from Dan, that's up to the north, you remember, just south of, just east, rather, of Caesarea Philippi, as a northernmost city, published even under the hills of Ephraim. That's Ephraim, that way to the south, you remember. So here, you're already hearing me, they're already on their way. You hear the voice from Dan, you hear this coming, echoing down into Ephraim there, coming of these Babylonians. Make ye mention to the nations, behold, publish against Jerusalem that watchers come from a far country and give out their voice against the cities of Judah. Well, the watchers in Daniel seems to be a foreign term for what the Jews had for angels. That is, the heavenly ones that spoke for them, watched for them. All right, now they're watching them, they're coming. In other words, your foreigners are coming into your land, the foreigners, as keepers of a field are they against her round about, because she hath been rebellious against me, saith Jehovah. Now this nation now is against Judah, because God is bringing them against them, because they've been rebellious against me. Rebellion against God and rejection of God always brings its consequences. Never has been otherwise. Now note, thy way and thy doings have procured these things unto thee. This is thy wickedness, for it is bitter, for it reacheth unto thy heart. Right, now you, who's responsible for it? You're responsible for it. Right now, when this country one of these days hits its, starts going down, really hits the bottom, some people are going to say, well, why did God let this happen? Why did God send this on? That's what we've been asking for. We've been asking for it for the last 30, 40 years, and we've rejected God and turned more and more to atheism and materialism and all those things, and listen to these humanists today instead of listening to the Word of God. We've been asking for it. The very thing God's always said I'm going to do. He always has done it, always will do it. You can't sow wild oats and reap a good wheat crop. You can't do that. They don't come that way. Well, let's finish this up. Go ahead. Now, know that again. Thy way and thy doings have procured these things. What you've done is what is bringing this on you. Under thee. This is thy wickedness. It is bitter, for it reacheth unto my heart. Under thy heart, rather. It comes from your heart. It's a wickedness from your heart. So, that's what's wrong today. What's the remedy today? Number one, change the hearts of the people. As long as the hearts are being fed with what is being fed with today, immorality, wickedness, homosexualism, all those sort of things, feed it with that, it's going to bear this fruit. So what is the answer to our problem today? My sermon fits right in with this. One next one. That's really going on with what it is. But anyway, what has happened today? The heart must be changed. How's that going to be done? Only by the Word of God. Only by preaching and teaching and turning people to God. And that's not what anybody is looking for today. So no encouraging signs in sight for what I can see. I don't see a single one. But there may be some that I don't see, but I don't see any. All right, moving on. Now then the prophet cries. I think he's speaking for the people now. My anguish. I am pained at my very heart. My heart is disquieted in me. I cannot hold my peace, because thou hast heard, O my soul, the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war. Now look at it. My anguish. So he's speaking for the few saints that were left, if there were any. He was speaking for them.
He and they were in anguish at the thought of what's coming. But the rest of the people didn't care. Didn't care. I think I can say that for a few people today. I was talking to somebody last night from Texas. And he said, California. Yes, from California. A friend called from California. And he said, Homer said, I've never been as concerned about our country as I am now. And I've never been as concerned about the church as I am now. Well, why? Because the church is succumbing to the spirit of the world. That's why. And then he's an elder of a church out in California, also a preacher. A fine man, fine consecrated Christian man. Understands the Bible. Knows what he told me. He's concerned about the country. And he's concerned about the church. Because the church is following the pattern of the city, of the country. That always happens. Go back and study history. The church always falls into the pattern of the nation in which it's found, God's people have. All right. Destruction upon destruction is cried, for the whole land is laid waste. Suddenly are my tents destroyed and my curtains in a moment. That is, and it hasn't come yet, but he sees it as if it's already happened. Country destroyed. Destruction upon destruction. Destruction followed destruction. One upon another. We've never experienced that. This country in its 200 or 300 or 400 years of history, wherever you want to start back then. The only war it's ever had, really, after the Revolutionary War, was the Civil War, within our land. Other than a few little Indian skirmishes and things of that nature. A little skirmish or two in old Mexico down here a few good many years ago. We've never had a real war in our country. And you just let some little thing happen here like they don't understand, and it throws our people into a panic. They're terrified. What's going to happen to them when a full-scale judgment hits them? Those that are not killed by the judgment, they're going to die of heart attack, heart failure anyhow. We'll scare them to death. They don't think about God. Don't know where to turn to. I'm not a prophet. I'm not trying to prophesy. I'm simply drawing conclusions from the way that God has always acted, always done, and God doesn't change. I, Jehovah, change not. I don't change. Principles don't change. Look a little further. How long shall I see the standard and hear the sound of the trumpet? For my people are foolish. They know me not, as God said. They don't know me. They are sottish children, and they have no understanding. They are wise to do evil, but to do good, they have no knowledge. Did I describe the great majority of our people today? They're wise to do evil, but they don't know how to do good. They're foolish. And I'm talking about the good that comes from God. Or they may dig down their pocket, give some money in a time of calamity and all that. But I'm talking about to do the good that God talks about. They don't know that. Don't know that. We've forgotten it because we don't know anything about God. I think several of you have mentioned to me that about young people lately. The young people in this country, they don't have an idea. They don't have anything to work toward. They don't have anything a balance to stay them. They don't have something to tie on to that's solid. Because they've been taught this humanistic doctrine in the schools for the last 20, 30, 40 years. Till now they don't know. They don't have anything to hold on to. So shoot a fellow if you don't like him, shoot him. Commit adultery, fornication, adultery, all of that. Live that kind of life, that's all they know. All right. Now then, he moves on. That's I beheld the earth, and lo, it was waste. A waste and void. And the heavens, and they had no light. I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled. And all the hills. The hills moved to and fro. I beheld, and lo, there was no man. And all the birds of the heaven were fled. I beheld, and lo, the fruitful field was a wilderness. And all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of Jehovah and before his fierce anger. Read that again. No need much comment. Just read it. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was waste and void. As it was back in Genesis 2, God said, in the beginning God created heaven and earth, the earth was waste and void. Wasn't anything on it. There was nothing growing yet. It was a tohu, as it's called. All right? Waste and void. The heavens, and had no light. All was dark. I beheld the mountains, like those symbols of strength and power, of that which is immovable, indestructible, mountains out here. I think about that every time I go home at night, and I'm looking at that sun is setting on those granite mountains down here south of us, and how solid they are. What is he seeing? His vision here, what's he seeing? Not literally. We're seeing here that which was a symbol of strength in being shaken. And the hills are dancing around. They got no stability. Further here, all the hills moved to and fro. I beheld, and lo, there was no man. And all the birds of the heaven were fled. No life. Desolation. Destruction. Not like those countries that we've been seeing pictures of back in the war. They had different wars of the bombs striking them, and what was left after it was over. Destroyed. I beheld, and lo, the fruitful field was a wilderness. And all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of Jehovah before his fierce anger. Isn't that a terrible picture? That's a picture of God when he's just taking all he can take, and he decides the time's come and let judgment fall on his people. When it falls, this is a picture of it. This is a picture of it. You say, well, that's not my concept of God. Well, that's God's concept of himself. That's what the prophet's concept of it. No, we've heard this silly, sentimental, sickly love business, and I don't mean true love. I'm not talking about that, because what we've been hearing isn't that. It's sort of a sweet, sticky something. God's love, he's not going to let any of this thing happen. He's like poor grandma spoiling the grandkids. They give them everything in the world they want. He's never going to punish one of them, not going to stop one of them. We think of God like that. Folks, God's not like that. And not God. All right? Now, here's a picture of fierce anger. Well, thus saith Jehovah, the whole land shall be a desolation. Yet will I not make a full end. And I want you to note that. And that's 4 or 5 times in the book of Jeremiah. He says God will not make a full end of the Jews. And there has. We're going to have it 2 or 3 times in our lesson today. For this shall the earth mourn, and the heavens above be black, because I've spoken it. I have purposed it. And I have not repented, neither will I turn back from it. I am not going to change. Now you can change, and then I'll change, but I'm not going to change as far as my judgment against wickedness is concerned. So God doesn't change toward this wickedness. He always brought these nations to an end. He bring ours to an end one of these days, unless we repent, unless there's enough salt to save it. I think there's still enough salt here to save it, but God would already have done it. We've still got some salt in this country. It's losing more and more its savor. And when it's lost its savor, it's thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out, trodden underfoot. Doesn't even make good fertilizer. It just makes a good sidewalk. That's all. All right? Turn from every city fleeth for the noise of the horsemen and bowmen. They go into the thickets and climb up upon the rocks. That's the people trying to hide. Every city is forsaken. Not a man dwelleth therein. They've left the cities to destruction and gone out of the country to try to find a cave, some place to hide. And thou, when thou art made desolate, what wilt thou do? Though thou clothest thyself with scarlet, though thou deckest thyself with ornaments of gold, though thou enlargest thine eyes with paint, in vain dost thou make thyself fair. Thy lovers despise thee. They seek thy life. Who are the lovers? She's been making love to Assyria, back when Assyria was a power. She's been making love to Egypt. Now she's going to try to make love to Babylon. They despise her. In other words, here's a picture of a woman who puts on her best garment she had and enlarges her eyes with that stuff they used back in those days to do that. Give them enhance their beauty, and they try to make an appeal to their lover. But the lover despised them. You ever thought about that in our own country? What country really loves the United States? They want what we've got. They want to come in, they want what we've got. But actually, this country doesn't have many friends when it comes to a showdown. So we decked ourselves with all this finery and made an appeal to them on that basis. Instead of a real basis of real enduring concepts, we'd use these other things, that trade and the glory of the money and wealth and all of that. When that's gone, where's the love for us? Take all these countries that we ever since World War II, and we've been giving all this aid to, and we're as broke as we can be here, and we're still trying to win by that friendship. I don't believe there's a nation on earth give a flip of his finger for this country where it stands or loses, goes down once, they've gotten everything they can get from us. You know one? Speak up if you do. Which one would you name? I don't think you can name one. All right? For I have heard a voice as of a woman in travail, the anguish as of her that bringeth forth her first child, the voice of the daughter of Zion, that means his people, now, the daughter of Zion or the people of Zion, the voice of the daughter of Zion that gaspeth for breath, that spreadeth her hands, saying, woe is me now, for my soul fainteth before the murderers. Now, you bet yourself, you tried to win them that way, instead of letting God take care of it, and now then they're here on your doorstep to murder you, to kill you, and you're like a woman in travail, and she's gasping, panting, trying to give birth to her firstborn son, but the murderer is there to take her. Folks, I'm going to tell you, this is a picture. This old Jeremiah, I tell you right now, he was doing some speaking in this chapter. I just hope when you get home that you'll sit down and take this chapter, as I tried to do yesterday in preparing on my lesson for today. I've taught Jeremiah before, but I always try to go back and learn more about what I've been over in early other years, I recall it. As I read this, I don't know, two or three times, I tried to get the feeling of those people there. Thou hast stricken them, but they were not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their face harder than a rock. They have refused to return. All right, now when you plead with them, God has, through his great prophets, and they treated them as they did. Jeremiah sees that Josiah's reformed and not reforming anybody. He's tearing down some idols, all right, but he's not getting to the heart. He's right here and tear down all these Buddhist temples and all that, and Roman Catholic cathedrals, but you haven't changed anything. You go up there and tear down the buildings in Washington to the ground, but you haven't changed anything. You don't change anything politically or religiously until you've changed the hearts of the people and make up the people, the country, or the church, or whatever it is. This is what we've got to realize. And I think too much of our preaching, my generation, the last 25 or 30 years, has been intended to build up numbers, to entertain the people, and to make a show to the denominations that we're not across the tracks anymore. We've come on this side of the tracks. I think a whole lot of it is that. A whole lot of these big buildings and all these fancy programs and all that, social gospel, trying to help people physically, that doesn't save anybody. We've got to get back to the basics. And this is what I'm trying to do in a little book that I've written. I don't know how, and one fellow wrote me, read it, the manuscript. He said, it's only as people will read it, they accept it, will accomplish your purpose. That's right. If I can't get them to do that, I will go on my merry way. Well, we move on. Move on. Let me get on here. He moved. Thou shalt. Then I said, surely these are poor. They are foolish. For they know not the way of Jehovah, nor the law of their God. He's pleading with God on the ground of their ignorance there. I will get me unto their great men and will speak unto them. For they know the way of Jehovah and the law of their God. So now then you're going to turn from the lower class and haven't had a chance to learn to those in what you call the upper class, if you want to divide them that way. You're going to make an appeal to them, for he said, they'll know. They'll listen to me. They didn't listen to him either. But these with one accord have broken the yoke and burst the bonds. That is from God. They burst whatever yoke they bore or bonds that they had with God. They've broken that. And it goes on. Wherefore a lion out of the forest shall slay them, a wolf of the evenings shall destroy them, a leopard shall watch against their cities, everyone that goeth out thence shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many and their backslidings are increased. Well, back to that principle again. What brought it on? God wanted to save them. God wants people today to turn to Him. He wants them to do right. But if they don't, then what alternative do they have? Only that of judgment. A vindication of His law. It was right and always bears its own penalty for transgression. I'm hoping that in these lessons in Jeremiah, we'll not only see the character of Jeremiah himself and see the character of the people, but in this we'll see God. Not only a God of vengeance, but a God who wanted to save them, but a God of justice. When He couldn't save them and they wouldn't be saved, He had no alternative but to vindicate His law, to justify his righteousness as God. So, I think, class, that there are three things that I look for in the prophets that I've been looking for years since I've been teaching the prophets. First of all is the condition of the people. What was the condition? How did God meet that condition? He met that condition by sending prophets who preached the character of God, who made them God conscious. When Paul was preaching in Athens, the God that made the world and all things therein, he tried to get them back to God. You make no progress until you bring people to a consciousness of God and of His righteousness and of His character, also of His justice, that brings individuals down to their knees as a result of their rejecting Him. Let me just go just a little bit. I guess my time's up. Backsliding and increase. Now notice God says, how can I pardon thee? Thy children have forsaken me and sworn by them that are no gods. When I had fed them to the full, they committed adultery and assembled themselves in troops at the harlots' houses. They were as fed horses roaming at large. Everyone neighed after his neighbor's wife. Shall I not visit for these things, saith Jehovah? And shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Kind of a picture today, isn't it? Individuals kneeling after their neighbor's wives, or youngsters there, the girls that they know, and all of that. Got this kind of a situation, worshiping at the foot of the goddess of pleasure, of lust, of wealth, of humanism. Every man making himself his own God. Doesn't need God. I'm a God myself. That's what humanism has been teaching. You're your own God. How sadly mistaken they are, and what a judgment we have in store for us. I just hope that something in this lesson has impressed you this morning. With the character of God, the righteousness and justice of God, the wickedness of people, the cause of their calamities, is their wickedness and their rebellion against Him. Well, I close the lesson there then. Now that's down to verse 10. We'll start there next time, 5:10. We're down at this morning then, was from 4, whatever it was, there down through 5 and verse 9. But the class was excused.